The clear skies tonight will make it easy for people to look at the nearly full moon and all the rest the sky has to offer. When you think about it, though, Earth-based astronomy certainly has its limits. Weather conditions can just stop the sky watching cold, which is why we've devised ways to get beyond the clouds. We have, for example, orbiting telescopes, certainly, but also a middle point between ground-based astronomy and looking at space from space. NASA runs a plane with heavy-duty astronomy equipment on board. SOFIA is the acronym for Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. And a couple of Southern Oregon astronomers just returned from a mission aboard SOFIA. One of them is sitting here in the studio with me. Dave Bloomsness is an amateur astronomer. It's hard to say that really fast in the morning, isn't it?
Yes.
With Southern Oregon Sky Watchers. Dave, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Jeffrey. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. And on the phone is Robert Black, who's the astronomy teacher at North Medford High School. Robert, welcome to you.
Good morning.
So tell us about how each of you got involved and interested in astronomy in the first place. Rob, let's start with you.
Well, you know, I've been an astronomy teacher here at North Medford High School for 12 years, and so being planetarium director and being a part of astronomy is just very exciting for me, my students, and every day is a, you know, the sky changes and there's things to look forward to, meteor showers and eclipses, and getting to fly on SOFIA was a dream come true for me, and I'm still kind of bathing in the afterglow, you know, of that experience that Dave and I had. And I got to say something, Dave's sitting there in Ashland with you, and Dave was a joy to be with at NASA for 5 days. He's the real deal about telescopes, and you know, watching him interact and know what he's doing, and him helping me with my students it's been a great experience. I want to publicly thank Dave for everything he's done for me and my career as an astronomy teacher. He's a great volunteer. So thanks, Dave.
Well, thanks, Robert.
So it is not your day job then, Dave Bloomsness?
No, I'm a locksmith by day and an astronomer by heart.
Mm-hmm. And so how long have you had the interest in astronomy? Is this something that dates way back to when you were a wee lad?
Not really. It was about 30 years ago, maybe not quite that long. I actually moved up to a place, lived in a house where the skies were dark after 30 years of regular in the city, and it just captured my imagination.
And so what was the first step you took? Did you buy a telescope right then?
Actually, I did. I was looking at the sky naked eye and studying things, and there happened to be a telescope store in town. So I went and bought a telescope, and the first thing I looked at, I saw there was one bright star in Capricorn that I couldn't figure out what it was. So I looked at it through the telescope, and it happened to be Jupiter, which I saw the bands on the planet and the moons, and that was it. I was sold.
You're absolutely hooked on it at that point.
Oh, yeah, that did it for sure.
So what is SOFIA? What actually goes on aboard SOFIA? Robert Black, can you fill us in on that?
Well, this is NASA at its finest, as far as I can tell. This is a research mobile observatory that can fly to any place around the globe. The night that we flew, there were 7 targets. And as a teacher, I had just got through teaching the evolution of stars with my students. And that goes from the formation of stars and planets all the way through their life cycles to, you know, red giants and red supergiants, and then supernova and supernovae, and then into, you know, black holes or pulsars or you know, white dwarfs. You know, this whole life cycle we've been studying, and there on SOFIA, the 13 or 14 targets encompassed every one of those topics. So it was a way to blend teaching and book learning and you know, investigating in the classroom, and then actually seeing world-class researchers hunting down these different life cycles of stars. For example, there was a researcher from Caltech, Bruce McCollum was his name, and he had observed a binary star pair, so two stars that orbited in the sky, and he and his team witnessed them merge. And so SOFIA can see into the this kind of mid-wavelength of light between visible light that we see with our eyes and then, you know, radio waves that can pass just about through anything. You know, radio's getting through everybody's walls and the roof of their car and glass and everything. Well, infrared, especially Dave and I found out the far infrared, the longer wavelengths, about 19 microns or so, 19 millionths of a meter, thousandths of a meter. These wavelengths can travel through the dust and dirt, and this Bruce McCollum actually could see through the dust of space and see the merger, and it was the first star merger. It was in Scorpio, the constellation, and this guy was ecstatic. I mean, he was probably our age, huh, Dave? He was 50,
yeah, probably.
60. And he looked like a schoolboy. He was so excited about gathering data in the infrared. And
he was really happy.
And seeing that and seeing somebody with those kind of credentials so excited about this research telescope really sold Sophia on me. And the way we heard it, and I'll let Dave chime in, the way we heard it is in the far infrared towards the microwave and the radio wavelengths, Sophia is kind of the only game in town. It's, you know, you can see infrared from, you know, Keck and the Atacama Desert of Chile and South America, but as far as that one band of infrared, Sophia is what all the researchers want to use. So it seems really important to keep Sophia active and keep it in the air and NASA to continue funding this great science project.
We're talking to Robert Black and Dave Bloomsness, who are both astronomers. Robert Black is the astronomy teacher at North Medford High School. Dave is a locksmith by day and an astronomer by night. You can join us as we talk about their mission aboard Sophia, the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy run by NASA. They just returned from a couple of flights aboard Sophia a couple of weeks ago. You can join us here at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. And I should point out that Dave is a real visual aid here because he's got the blue Sophia jacket with the NASA patch and the Sophia patch and a little name tag that says Dave Airborne Astronomy Ambassador. This is the program, the Astronomy Ambassador program that got you guys on board?
That is the program. And what it does, it takes educators and it shows them science being done in a real unusual environment. And hopefully the effect will be that they take it back to their classrooms and help to spread the word about how science is actually done in real life.
And how difficult, Dave, is it to get into the program?
Well, we applied almost a year ago, and we had to fill out a bunch of paperwork. We had to, you know, convince them that we were a good team. We kind of had to sell ourselves, and then once we did get accepted, we needed to take about a 16-week an advanced astronomy course through Montana State University. We did it online, and I thought, well, I know a lot of the stuff. I've been studying this for years. I thought this will be easy, but it was tough. It was a hard course, but we passed it with flying colors.
And so was this even before you got chosen for Sophia?
Well, this is how we were chosen, but we had part of the deal was to take this class. And it really did help because even though I was familiar with a lot of astronomy, it really helped me to kind of round out my knowledge and I could talk to the astronomers and really understand what they were saying.
And so how did you find out that for sure you were going to go aboard Sophia?
Well, they called us. They were supposed to let us know, I think it was last June, and then the sequester came and everything got put on hold. So just about the middle of November, I got a phone call on a Sunday night saying, this is Coral Clark from NASA, and you're going. So and I called Robert, and he just had the call as well. We were just, you know, kind of hollering on the phone. We were pretty excited.
So how much preparation? I mean, we talked about the astronomy course you had to take and everything else. So, Robert, what kinds of physical preps did you have to do? And you had to get yourself to Palmdale, California, is that right?
Yeah, NASA took care of all the logistics. They're a world-class operation. So they got us there. They prepared us for, you know, gave us an idea of what we needed to do. And really what we needed to do was be there and engage and show interest. And I think Dave and I did a great job of that. The team there, I was a little bit apprehensive about whether or not we'd be in the way with the researchers and the camera operators and the telescope operators and the flight commanders and the pilots and the programmers. Would they accept us? You know, would we be in the way? You know, how would they, you know, feel about a couple of educators? And I was really surprised about how well they treated us. And they included the first night, the one of the camera operators came up immediately and told us, you know, that we were welcome to come up to see the screens where the telescope interacts with the camera and get the live data. And I still remember, I mean, you know, James, Chris, and Andrew, I mean, they were great guys, and I felt really a part of the team for two nights. And NASA's great about that. NASA realizes that education is one of the most important things to, you know, keeping them at the forefront of space and aeronautical. You know, NASA's National Aeronautical and Space, so they do planes and spaceships, and Sophia is a perfect example of that.
So what's it like, Dave Bloomsness, aboard Sophia? I mean, is it like a big cargo plane with bare walls and stuff like that, or is it fairly comfortable? I mean, how many people fit aboard? Is it just chock-a-block with equipment?
Oh, well, there's a lot of equipment. It's a 747, but it's an SP, which is a shorter model. I think it's about 48 feet shorter than your standard 747.
Looks kind of stubby when you look at the pictures.
Yeah, it is. And because of that, it has longer range, and it just worked better for them. And they've got the telescope in the back of the plane, and it weighs 17 metric tons, so it's a pretty big telescope. And there's consoles behind the telescope, actually in front, because you kind of sit backwards, I get front and back mixed up when I'm sitting there. But there's consoles towards the front of the plane, and then there's some of the first class seats left in the nose. And the inside is there's a couple of panels that there's no finish work on them. They've got plastic covering the insulation and stuff, so it looks a little bit rough. But all the consoles are great, and the equipment is pretty amazing. And there was around 24 people on the flight total, including the two pilots and the navigator.
All right, so pretty good-sized crew, considering all the equipment on there as well. Now, nobody actually flies back there where the telescope is because it's cold and airless, right?
Well, the telescope is sealed off, but it comes through a wall, through a bulkhead, so we're protected from the outside atmosphere. And there's a lot of equipment behind it, so the back probably 20% of the plane is taken up by the telescope.
So, Robert Black, I found myself wondering about what kind of machinery is necessary to keep a telescope, and granted, this is infrared, it's not visual necessarily, right, but it's to keep it fixed on distant objects aboard a plane that's moving.
Right, and they sent us the flight plan a week or so before our flight, and what you see immediately is once you take off from Palmdale, which is an hour or two, depending on traffic, from L.A., due east, once you take off and get to altitude up close to 40,000 feet, you see straight lines. The pilots will take a straight trajectory, and during that time, the Sophia will lock in on a predetermined target in space, and they will fly basically straight, so that the plane helps steady the motion, and then the telescope can move up and down in what's called declination. And Dave and I heard a fascinating story our first night. About how long it actually took to build, engineer, and actually make Sophia flight ready. There was all sorts of, bankruptcies, and it was supposed to be privately run by United Airlines, and they went bankrupt at some time during that, and the Germans had a hard time engineering. This is, by the way, I don't think anyone's mentioned, the partnership between NASA and the German Space Agency. And the Germans contributed the telescope and then the mechanism to keep it buoyant and floating and fixed at a certain position. And it's a marvel of engineering. It really is. To hear people talk about it, to actually be able to fly and steadily focus with high precision on a tiny, tiny spot in space is pretty amazing to think that we have that technology. But it obviously works, and we got to see it firsthand. It was great to be there. But it was a 12-year process. I heard about Sophia. They were working on it in 1999, and it was about 12 years before it actually was flight ready. So it was a lot of trials and tribulations. Dave, that story took what, about 30 minutes?
It was pretty informative. It was quite the tale.
Now, there was an earlier aerial telescope.
The Kuiper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It did infrared, didn't it, Robert? The Kuiper.
Yeah, it was an infrared telescope, and it was based at NASA Ames, where Sophia was originally based. They got moved down to Dryden Space Center, which is now Armstrong Space Center. And the Kuiper, had a good run, but the interesting thing was Congress canceled the Kuiper before Sophia was flight ready. And so there was a time when we didn't have kind of that long infrared capability that astronomers are really wanting to get. And so there's been this need for so long, and then now it's coming online. And seeing I already mentioned this, but seeing the astronomers so excited about getting these longer infrared wavelengths was a real joy to behold, to be a part of that. I'm really, really happy I was there those nights.
We're talking to two guys who just came home recently from a flight with NASA in the stratosphere aboard SOFIA, the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy. Robert Black on the phone, Dave Bloomsness here in the studio with me. You can join our discussion on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. It's an interesting counterpart here, Dave Bloomsness, because people don't generally like to take overnight flights, the red eye, we call it. I realize this could be called the infrared eye pretty easily.
That's right.
So what was it like aboard, though? I mean, this is a time of day when it's not particularly easy to stay awake, and yet here you are with all this great stuff around you and really interesting things going on.
Yeah, I found it easy to stay awake. I stay up pretty late sometimes being an amateur astronomer, and being on board the Sophia, it was a little bit loud. You know, we had headphones so we could talk to each other. You could still talk without them, but you had to talk kind of loud. But the nice thing about the headphones, you could listen to other conversations without talking over them, so you could see what the telescope operators were doing and the image collectors were doing. You kind of get an idea, and they'd get something good. We'd walk up and, you know, because you could tell by the way we were talking, they'd say, well, this looks really good. So we'd go up and check it out. And back to the telescope real briefly, we're talking about the technology of that. And it actually floats on a spherical, oil-filled spherical bearing, as well as some gyroscopes. And when you hit turbulence, it would look like the telescope was dancing, but it was actually the plane moving and the telescope holding still, which that really impressed me a lot.
Wow. So the telescope held steady.
It just stayed right on target, and the plane would move, and you'd swear the scope was moving, but that's just us moving around it.
So did you guys get to pick targets or say, hey, can we look at this for a while, or was it all they said, here's what we're going to look at tonight?
It's all planned. These guys supply well in advance for this stuff, so they had it planned a long time before we got there.
And so it was two flights on two separate nights?
We did two flights. Usually they do alternate nights. They'll do like a Wednesday and a Friday, or Monday and Wednesday. We did Wednesday and Thursday, two nights in a row. So the second night was a little tough. We didn't get enough sleep. But still, the excitement was there. I managed to stay up all night, both nights, no problem.
And where did it fly? I'm curious to know what parts of the sky you were looking at, because there might have been parts of the sky you could see that you wouldn't see necessarily from southern Oregon usually.
Well, we didn't go that far south, but we did go the first night we went up over Oregon, then back across up into Canada a ways, and then back down through Idaho, I believe, and then came back. We actually saw Las Vegas from 40,000 feet, coming in about 5 in the morning. And the second night, we flew out over the Pacific. I would say a good, maybe halfway to Hawaii, maybe not that far, but pretty far out over the Pacific, and came back and flew right over Medford on the way back in.
Really?
Yeah.
It must have been fun to look down and go, hey, that's where we're
I tried to see it. I think I saw Crescent City as we were coming in, but I didn't quite see Medford. It's hard to be at the windows. The windows are pretty small and hard to see out of.
So, Robert Black, I mean, what do you do with what you got aboard Sophia now? How do you come back and present this to your students in the few weeks you have left at school?
Well, I did learn, and I've already taught some of this. I'm going to do a better job in the future, but the pre-flight training, we met the system analyst and the computer systems guy. His name was Zahir Ali, and he was just a genius when it came to camera systems. And he was really touting spectroscopes and spectroscopic study of space, and, you know, let me realize that that's really a big part of the research. And what that does is it breaks the spectroscope, and Cornell University does a great job of building some of these cameras and spectroscopes, and he talked to us about the importance of being able to analyze the light that comes in and being able to tell the composition based on the separation of the light that was brought into the cameras and the spectroscopes. And they also gave me a couple of labs on the detection of infrared and converting that into sound and being able to detect infrared radiation from the sun. So I've got a couple of lessons now that I know the importance of it that I kept hearing from all the astronomers and scientists, you know, to emphasize that, so when kids get to college, they already have an understanding of the infrared wavelength and how important it is in research. And, you know, it was a great process. And Dave and I watched a couple of famous stars, Arcturus, which is in the constellation Bootes. They spent an hour calibrating their equipment on the first night, where they know everything spectroscopically about Arcturus, and then they calibrated their spectroscope on it. So when they looked into some nebula clouds, and later on were the next night looking at Jupiter, they could make sure that the equipment was working precisely. So we watched them just labor through a calibration sequence, showing us that, you know, this was a top-notch professional outfit that's going to get good results, that, you know, you can rely on the data they collected. And that was important to see too, that, you know, they're working hard to collect verifiable data. So learned a lot on that front.
Absolutely. So Dave Bloomsness, was this sort of like an amusement park ride, in the sense that, you know, let's go again. You don't want it to end.
It was a very long amusement park ride. So I think the ideal situation would be one of the data takers. That would be a great job because they're getting all the stuff coming in and they do a little processing. Raw data a lot of times is very uninteresting and very unimpressive.
Just piles of numbers?
Pretty much. They're just really weird-looking images. But then they process them a little bit for one reason, to make sure that they're actually getting what they're looking for. And then you can see a little bit of what they're doing. But I think just the excitement of being there and getting the images and knowing what you're looking at would be that would be the job to have, in my opinion.
And is it too late to pursue that job?
I think for me it is, yeah. But I can do a lot of it. Science on my own, so that's what I'm going for.
So, I mean, obviously you stepped off the plane with jackets. I mean, did you get the thumb drives with images and things like that too?
No. So a lot of the data is the astronomers have priority with it for a year. And so we're going to try to follow these guys and see what they're doing. But they have a year to mess with it. If they don't get a paper out, then it's free for anybody. But they have complete control over the data for the first year.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that's exactly the second part of what I'm going to do is I've got all the astronomers' names and all the targets that we shot those two nights, and I'm going to keep up with and follow their research and present it, you know, from a firsthand point of view to my students in the coming years. So I'll be able to say, you know, I met Bruce McCollum or Enkid to Peter from University of California. She was studying Jupiter and the composition of the upper atmosphere and the troposphere, and, you know, be able to be a part of that. And that's very powerful to tell students, you know, I was there that night. These images and this data, you know, Dave and I helped, you know, collect that. So,
in cool moments in astronomy, does this rank number one, Robert Black, for you?
There's no doubt. I've had a lot of great experiences, but this experience with Sophia is number one.
Same for you, Dave.
I'd have to agree with that. This was a pretty amazing experience.
All right, I can see by the look on your face that you really had a good time. Dave Bloomsness is an amateur astronomer with Southern Oregon Sky Watchers. Robert Black is the astronomy teacher and runs the planetarium at North Medford High School. They just both got back from Sophia, the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy run by NASA. Gentlemen, thank you both and congratulations.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. We'll take a short break on The Exchange and then back with Garrison Keillor.